the OTB Podcast Network.
Old Firm in new Super League. Super Leagues are bad, except when it's our Super League, seems to be the headline. Jerseys and hoops in demand. This is a story in The Sun this morning. Tom English of BBC Scotland is with us this morning. Tom, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all right. Yourself?
Well, we booked you yesterday just to chat generally about how Scottish football is being left behind. And lo and behold, overnight, a breaking story that makes us look like the best guest bookers in the world. So our timing is excellent. So is yours.
Well, I think story in inverted commas. Yeah, you know, I've read it. A club source says, I mean, it's interesting. A club source says they want Celtic and Rangers in the new British league. But another club source says that they don't want any more than 18 teams in this league. So that's four of the current Premiership will have to move out to make way for Celtic and Rangers in a new 18-team league. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for my scepticism, but I think it's rubbish.
Turkey's not notoriously known for voting for Christmas.
Yeah, and look, this thing is as old as the hill. Celtic and Rangers going to England 20 years ago, coming up for the 20th anniversary. Dermot Desmond, majority shareholder of Celtic, obviously, said a British league will happen inevitably. The ball is already rolling, and there's been preliminary discussions. That was summer 2001. And it keeps cropping up every time he does an interview, which is not very often. He's asked about Celtic and Rangers joining the Premier League. And every time he says, yeah, it's inevitable. I said it in 2009, 2015, 2020, 2021, earlier on this year. It's never going to go away. It never happens, but people never stop talking about it.
Why does it not happen, as a matter of interest? What's your instinct on that? Because you can see for the bigger teams in the Premier League that Celtic and Rangers aren't actually a threat. They're an opportunity.
Yeah, but they are a threat. They're a threat to, it all goes back to money, isn't it? Greed is the word of the week, the buzzword. And it is, as you said, Turkey's voting for Christmas. You know, why would the Premiership clubs vote, Premier League clubs vote for Celtic and Rangers? It means that there's just two spots taken up that they could have. And why would the authorities in this country vote for Celtic and Rangers to leave? That's their TV deal, as paltry as it is, obliterated in one sweep. So it'd be like La Liga voting for Real Madrid and Barcelona to leave. I mean, why would you do that?
Unless it is separate to a vote entirely, and it is, like we've seen this week, some sort of breakaway. What would the Scottish public reaction to that be?
Well, it's a good question. You know, there's been as much moral indignation in Scotland about the European Super League as anywhere else. But if you ask Celtic and Rangers fans, well, what about a British Super League? A lot of them would go, oh, yeah, we'd be up for that. As you said earlier on in the intro, if it's their Super League, no. If it's our Super League, oh yeah, well maybe. You know, it's hypocrisy left, right, and centre. Throughout this week, we have seen hypocrisy all over the shop.
What's been your take on this week, as a matter of interest?
Look, a lot of shock and horror and outrage, and that's understandable. But like, football invited the capitalists in a long time ago. So we shouldn't be surprised when capitalists behave like capitalists. I mean, it's like inviting a pig into your house and then being shocked that he's eaten all your furniture. It's a pig. What do you expect it to do? And I mean, you know, the hypocrisy is breathtaking. Sky Sports are now apparently the moral guardians of the game. Gary Neville is Mother Teresa. Sky Sports opened the door to all of this when they sparked a breakaway and shafted the old football league. In the process, I think they pay about 3.6 billion in their current deal for the Premier League. They pay about 9 or 10 million pounds per Premier League game, and the transfer fees and the wage inflation and the oligarchs and the sheikhs and the billionaires, it can all be traced back in a major way to Sky Sports and the breakaway. But we have Gary Neville, and I think Gary Neville is a fantastic pundit. I love watching him talk about football. But has been lauded as the man of the people here. While, you know, pontificating on a subscription-only channel that played a big part in creating the culture that he's railing against. It's amazing. Everything about this has been amazing.
It is true. Everything about this has been absolutely amazing. And it is the story that keeps on giving, to the point where it emerged yesterday. This conglomeration of billionaires organized a PR company on Sunday afternoon for a launch on Sunday evening. It's like,
It's amateur. No wonder all these clubs are billions in debt. I mean, if this is the way they do their business, no wonder they're all in financial trouble. Florentino Perez, I don't want to be unkind to a 74-year-old man, but he's come across as a man in dotage. It's stuff last night in Spain, the interview he did in Spain last night, remarkable stuff. I mean, someone needs to take him aside and say, look, Florentino, just take a break here, because he's embarrassing himself. And like we hear that this is a great victory for football. And of course it is, you know, the death of the Super League, if it is the death of the Super League, is a victory for football. But, and we hear, oh, we've got our game back. But the game you're getting back is still controlled by the billionaires. They haven't gone away. You know, Abramovich and Henry and Sheikh Mansour and the Glazers. They haven't gone away. I mean, they've bottled it this time. But they'll probably try again.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, and a note like when they're doing all these, John Henry doing his mea culpa yesterday, he's not apologising for delivering a garbage idea, lamentably executed. He's not apologising for the greed. He's apologising for causing disruption. He's not saying we'll never revisit this again. He's just saying, Sorry about that, lads. So there's no reassurances from him that they're not going to try this stroke again, because that's what they do. And like, we're all kind of a little bit complicit. I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan. I thought John Henry was the greatest thing since sliced bread when Liverpool won the European Cup and won the Premier League. Virgil van Dijk, 75 million. Alisson, all the big money signings. I want more big money signings. But that's part of the problem. You know, we have created a culture now where everybody wants more and more and more. And that includes fans.
There's very few Manchester City fans who have any problem with their ownership. We saw the Newcastle fans really desperate for Saudi investment. That's what gave me the sense that if this did happen, if it had been handled properly, if the idea had been floated, if they'd got some of the pundits on board early on, so there was a debate about it, This could easily have happened. Like, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that a good PR campaign, well thought out, a structured, slow, steady release with a few chosen journalists who break the story, that they're thinking about this. Oh, no, we're just thinking about it. We have a few ideas. Yeah. What do you guys all think about it? Oh, it's terrible. But what about if we did this? The football fans at those big clubs would have been like, so I'll get the same league games I get every weekend, and every Thursday night you're guaranteeing me one of the best teams in world football up against my team, and I no chance of getting around. That sounds pretty good to me. Do you know, like, football fans, very fickle, could easily have been brought through this in a way. It's just that it was so cack-handed.
It was extraordinarily cack-handed. And it's just further proof, not that we needed it, but anyway, it's there, that these guys haven't a clue and don't care about the way football fans think. They thought this would wash. They thought it would wash because they didn't understand the culture. They understand the money. That's all they understand. And we shouldn't be surprised by that, because that's what they are. Money is what they are. They're not about sentiment. They're not about history. They're not about the fans, even though they kind of say they are. I mean, if anyone who believes that, if you believed it then, you're a fool. If you believe it now, you're a bigger fool. They don't care about the fans. They want fans of the future. So they want people all over the world sitting in front of their laptops watching streams of games. That's who they're interested in. And they're not apologizing for that. They're still not apologizing for that. So it's, you look at the world we live in now, and because Eddie Howe, there's a lot of talk of Eddie Howe coming to Celtic. So I've been looking into Eddie Howe, and, you know, everyone has been looking into Eddie Howe. And he's Bournemouth time in anticipation, perhaps, of him being announced Celtic manager. And Bournemouth, you know, the money that Bournemouth, the club that Bournemouth has spent, I mean, in microcosm, you can see the finance and the greed and the distortion of English football in Bournemouth. Between July 2018 and July and August 2019, Bournemouth spent 120 million in the transfer market. And then they got relegated. Now, Bournemouth, I've been to Bournemouth's ground. It's just like a slightly souped-up version of the Markets Field. You know,
I just Googled 11,329 capacity. 11,329 is the capacity of the Vitality Stadium.
I mean, I went there a few years ago to interview Ryan Fraser when he was still playing for Bournemouth. And I was told, be prepared, this is a very small stadium. I couldn't believe how small it was. I mean, honestly, it was tiny. And everything about it was tiny. I was at a press conference there. There was five journalists at the press conference. There'd have been 50 journalists at a Celtic press conference same week.
Are we wrong that we don't see that as the embodiment of the British version of the American dream, where even plucky little Bournemouth with their 11,000 capacity, they can spend 120 million in 18 months?
That's the dream. That's the dream. That's it. And we sell this dream. And we kid ourselves, little Bournemouth, doing it against the odds. 120 million quid. A lot of it badly spent, by the way.
Jordan Ibe,
yeah. I mean, Dominic Solanke scored a few goals in the championship, but they spent 20 million. They didn't spend 20 million on him to score goals in the championship. 15 million here, 10 million there. Extraordinary. And this could be repeated, not throughout the Premier League, but in various parts of it. And no wonder the thing is in the state it's in. And that there will be a lot of football fans, certainly in Scotland, because Scotland, obviously, there's no money in the Scottish League. We're looking on this week with something approaching glee and hoping and a curse on all their houses. Because, you know, some English clubs come to Scottish clubs and they take their players for like a Virgil van Dijk, a Kieran Tierney, John McGinn, all these players that have gone down for smaller fees, and their clubs, the fans of these clubs feel like they've been undersold, because the lure of the Premier League and the glamour of the Premier League is too much for the good Scottish players or players based in Scotland to resist. And the lure of the Premier League is based on money and clubs spending way too much money because of the culture, I hate to go back to Sky Sports again, but it does go back to Sky Sports. And this ridiculous spectacle of Sky railing against greed. I mean, you know, this is jumping the shark, baby.
It's been a weird week. It really has been a weird week. Not that I have sympathy for Fiorentino Perez, but I have a sense that the desperation that they have, that Barcelona have, that Inter, who are 600 million odd in debt, that Juve, who are struggling financially, that all of those clubs have, is that they're looking at Paris Saint-Germain and they're looking at Manchester City and, to a lesser extent, maybe Chelsea, and going, we cannot compete with this into the future. Yeah. The miracle of the three Champions Leagues that Zidane won when his team weren't the best in Europe, but they were an amazing cup team. Obviously, there's a financial cost in the background to that. That's unsustainable. And they do see that the future is that the petrodollars make the entire Champions League, over the course of every couple of years, they might win from time to time. But over the next two decades, how often are we actually going to see Manchester City win? How often are we actually going to see Paris Saint-Germain win? Most of the time, probably. Eventually, that kind of reaches that point. Unless Bayern Munich somehow, because of the weird way that German football is set up, can be there. But you can see how Real Madrid would be like, actually, we can't compete with this. So that's their desperation for the European Super League. And in some ways, while he's saying that, and it looks ludicrous, that this is just a pause, this is on standby, I can see them trying to get this back in 5 years' time with a much better thought-out plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Florentino Perez says last night in Spain that, you know, oh, well, maybe we didn't present it properly, we didn't market it properly. That's their regret. Their regret is not the idea. Andrea Agnelli says it still calls it a beautiful idea. So they haven't learned their lesson. The lesson that they have learned is we should have sold this better. Not that this is a dud.
Do you think they're right though, Tom? I don't think that the world of football really has that much of an issue. The reason I don't think the world of football has that much of an issue with it is because the new Champions League isn't that different. It's a little bit different in that Leicester can qualify. But if Man United don't qualify, they're still getting in. If Chelsea or Arsenal, well, not Arsenal, sorry. If Chelsea don't qualify, they're still getting in. It's like, it's not that different.
No. But this is, I mean, people were portraying this as good v. evil, right v. wrong. What it was money v. money. And the new Champions League, as you say, UEFA's new Champions League, it there's a safety net in there for the elite. So, like, for example, if this new Champions League with its 100 extra games and all the revenue that will bring in, if this was starting now or next week, Liverpool in seventh place in the Premier League would be given a wild card, and West Ham, who are in fifth, would be in the Europa League. So it's the big boys getting looked after. It's a Super League of a different bent, but it comes from the same place. More money, protectionism for the big boys, or the supposed big boys, and more games, more of everything, bigger, just to satisfy. This is the creation of this new Champions League from 2024. It's purely to satisfy the European Super League clubs. Again, they haven't won the big victory this week, but they've won a small victory by this new Champions League.
As a fallback position, it's not bad.
Like, do you think, Tom, that the role of the fans will change in the view of the fans? Like, it may not change at all, but do you think that there will be a greater sense of importance? They'll feel, God, we've actually affected something this week. They may not have affected anything, it may be completely different reasons, but maybe that hypocrisy that you speak about there, which has existed in football for so long, maybe people become wise to it. Like, I mean, we did see footballers wearing the shirts in their anti-Qatar protest a couple of months ago. I'm not sure that happens for a Qatar World Cup that takes place 10 years ago, for example. Like, are the players, are the supporters more aware of all these different things that are at play in football?
I think they are. And certainly the supporters stood up in a spectacular way, and they forced this, no doubt about it. And it was supporter power and player power. Some of the players that spoke out very powerfully. But my concern is that it'll just revert. It'll revert to supporters wanting more big money players and forgetting how a club might get the big money player. And they get the big money player because they've got a billionaire in there. And a billionaire says, well, if you want the big money player, where do you think the money is going to come from? It's going to come from a European Super League. So if you want this world where you have all of these Galacticos, don't complain about how we create this world for you. And it's kind of a goes around in circles. But I mean, I can see that, you know, the Arab Spring of football, if you like. I can see fans of most clubs, not all, but fans of a lot of clubs in 6 months or a year saying, no, we're not spending enough money on the transfer market. We need more, we need big players. What are you doing about this Stan Kroenke? What are you doing about this Joel Glazer?
I mean, the best person in the world to be right now is Erling Haaland, who's like looking, which of you billionaires needs to overpay me now to pacify your fan base? But he's, come on down. Back
blank
to Brinkstruck.
Check. Yeah. Blank check for the lad. Yeah. You know, write your own number, Erling.
Yeah, the it will be interesting to see if this Arab Spring maintains, because like maybe it can, and maybe I'm just being too cynical about the impact of it, and I don't know. There's been talk here, Tom, about like it's a good time for the League of Ireland to position itself as an umbilical link with your local community. These players, they are not getting paid fortunes. They're essentially doing it because they do love playing football and it's a job for them. But they're representing your community. Is there something similar happening in Scotland where? I mean, it's the worst time in the world for fans not to be able to go and see local football. But is there any hope that this has a knock-on impact for Motherwell and St Johnstone and Cowdenbeath and whoever?
Well, look, what we're seeing a lot of in Scotland during coronavirus is clubs kind of engaging or re-engaging with their communities. I mean, the vast majority of clubs in Scotland, and there's 42 of them in the four divisions, are community clubs. And they do a terrific job in their community, most of them. And they've done more of that during coronavirus, or at least more of that has been reported. A lot of these clubs will say, you know, we do all this stuff all the time, but you're too obsessed with Celtic and Rangers to bother with us. And there is a lot of truth in that, actually. So what we're seeing during the lockdown, even though the whole coronavirus thing was horrific, in a little football world, we're seeing an awful lot of good stories that remind us of the power of football at that basic level. You know, Stenhouse Muir, a club, fantastic community work, like really, really good, helping out people in the community, looking after people, and have become more of a pillar of their community on the back of all of this. That can't be forgotten as well. So there's many different football worlds. There's the European Super League, which has appalled everybody this week. And then there's, say, Stenhouse Muir and many other clubs like it. And there'll be clubs in Ireland as well, like Stenhouse Muir, who are doing good stuff, but we're not that bothered with their good stuff because we want to be appalled by the bad stuff.
Yeah. No, it's true. One last thing. The delicious possibility of Jose Mourinho being the new Celtic boss was floated this week. What are the chances of this?
Well, do you know, after Brendan Rodgers, it was mooted that Dermot Desmond had met Jose Mourinho. And that rumour has never really gone away. I heard that from a couple of different people in Ireland, actually.
Well, Jose's got an Irish agent or manager, so, like, that, you know, it's not a million miles away. It's pretty easy to make that link.
It is pretty easy to make that link, and he was out of a job at the time and all the rest of it. But, it didn't happen. I can't see it. I can't see it. I would love to see it because it would be hilarious. And I think it would be a disaster for Celtic and for Mourinho, I think. But I can't see it. I mean, obviously Eddie Howe has been the front runner, but that's gone on a long time now and there's still no announcement. There's talk of Chris Wilder coming into the picture. But there's still no smoke at Celtic Park, and I think the fans are getting increasingly agitated. You know, they got knocked out of the cup by Rangers at the weekend, 20-odd points behind. Well, the league is over, but they've been humiliated by Rangers this season, and there's so much work to do at Celtic. It's not just the manager; the entire team needs to be built, and I don't think there's the kind of money there to rebuild it that Jose would get excited about. So, as much as I'd like to see it, and Roy Keane and all the other box office names, I would doubt it.
All right, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us, Tom. Cheers. Always great to talk to you.
Cheers, lads.
Tom English from BBC Scotland there.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.